This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, good morning to you. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. I'm Mark. That's Carl. That's Kim St. Ange. We got Sue Thomas keeping an eye on traffic for you. Good news is there's no rain falling out there this morning that I saw on the way in. I haven't heard any reports of it this morning. So hopefully, although it's a chilly morning, you should be fairly good on the roads unless somebody does something dumb, which is always a possibility, as we know. So Sue Thomas will keep an eye on that for you. Coming up, we're going to talk to Christian Datok. He is a White House reporter for the Washington Examiner. You know, they've really opened up that White House press corps, and they're letting new voices in there. And we're going to talk to him about this whole debate over MGA. That's what I'm calling it. It's Making Gaza Great Again. It's not MAGA. It's MGA. Because there's two G's in the middle of it. So we're going to talk more about that. Bibi Netanyahu spoke out about it yesterday, and I think his comments are very important. I've got a couple of those for you here this morning. A lot of misinformation about this. And the more the Arab world hates this idea, the more it tells you what a brilliant idea it is. There's a reason they hate it. They don't want to get stuck with all those Palestinians who would be relocated. They'd rather them stay where they are. Why is that? Ask yourself. So we'll talk to Christian about that coming up. Next hour, as I mentioned earlier, Senator Adam Schnelting at 7:35. We've got Shannon Bream on later. Can't wait to talk to her because it took Pam Bondi exactly one day. She got sworn in yesterday, and before the end of the day, she had already made major moves in the Department of Justice to investigate wrongdoing and to stop spending on certain projects. And it's going to be refreshing. I can't wait. It's going to be like the first 2 weeks of the Trump administration now that she's in place. So we'll talk to Shannon Bream about that as well. At about 8:20 today, our friend Griff Jenkins, of course, is going to join us as well. Right now, Carl, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Beautiful ballroom like I have at Mar-a-Lago, as beautiful as it can be. It was going to cost about $100 million. I offered to do it. They just didn't know what to do. They sort of said, this is good, but they had no idea. So I'm going to try and make the offer to myself, you know?
I don't know if you saw this yesterday or not, but Trump's got all of those people crowded in the East Room over there, which is not a huge room. I've been in there before. And he's like, this isn't big enough. We've outgrown this room. I offered the Biden administration to build a ballroom right next to this. I build great ballrooms. And they did. They said no. So I think I'll offer it to myself.
In Los Angeles in 2028, my administration will not stand by and watch men beat and batter female athletes. And we're just not going to let it happen.
Yeah, thank you. Of course, President Trump, after he signed that bill, the ballroom comments were before, and he sat down, he signed the executive order, I should say, surrounded by thankful young female athletes.
U.S. presidents traditionally attend this dinner. However, Donald Trump never went to it during his first term in office. Do you want him to be there this year?
No. No one wants that.
Yeah, you know, they asked Caroline Leavitt this yesterday. I think Peter Ducey asked her this question in the news conference. Is the president going to attend the White House Correspondents' Dinner? Because they've hired a comedian to host it who hates him. And she goes, I don't know. I haven't talked to him about it yet. Pretty clear. She hates him.
They're screaming about Elon Musk over there, but hey, George Soros and his boy are okay. So I tell my colleagues across the other side of the aisle, take your salty tears and sit right back down.
I just got to tell you, man, if you ever get an opportunity to go on C-SPAN when Nancy Mace has the floor, it's well worth it. Yesterday they had a hearing where they had a governor and a couple of other people in there talking about transgender rights and money that was spent on this and money that was spent on that. And Nancy Mace had her 5 minutes with them, and it was must watch TV. She was talking specifically about some of that USAID funding. Go to cut 11 for us, Carl, please.
Okay. USAID awarded over $750,000 to fund alleviating loneliness among migrant garment workers in India. Does this advance America's interests, Governor?
No.
I have no position.
USAID awarded $1.5 million for providing a gender-sensitive response to migration at the Venezuelan border. Does this advance America's interests, Governor?
No.
No. I have no position.
Does this advance the interests? Okay, so USAID awarded $4.3 million on October 1st, 2023 to a group to fund comprehensive health services for men having sex with other men in South Africa. Does this advance the interests of American citizens, Governor?
No.
No. So this hearing yesterday is going on, and she makes a reference to people who like to say that they're a different gender, right? The common word for them forever has been transsexual. The LGBTQ... The T is for transsexual, except you can't shorten it anymore. Somebody decided that if you shorten it, it's a bad. Somebody's offended by it. Like if you refer to it as the thing that drives the gears between your wheels, you've somehow offended somebody by that. If you refer to your transmission by the shorter term for your transmission. So she said this in describing some of this USAID aid. And when her 5 minutes was over, a Democrat, the Connolly guy, I don't even know where he's from, called her out and claimed that she should be discredited for upsetting the decorum of the House for using a slur against people who are transsexual by shortening that word. It's not even trans. And this was part of that interaction that she had. Go to cut 12, Carl, please.
The gentlelady has used a phrase that is considered a slur in the LGBTQ community and the transgender community. And let me please finish without interruption.
And tranny, tranny, tranny. I don't really care. You want penises in women's bathrooms, and I'm not going to have it.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Nancy Mace is savage. She's just savage. And after she got done saying that, she looked down on the podium in front of her in the next row down. MTG is sitting there, and they're just looking at each other, smiling, shaking their heads. I mean, for the guy to bring that up in the hearing, I just don't know. Now, I didn't hear her say that. It went on for 5 minutes. I caught a clip out of it where she was questioning these panelists. I didn't hear her how she used the word, but I'm not quite sure why that's. I'm not quite sure how that word became offensive. Who decided that word was offensive?
I remember that word being more widely used years ago. And
well, I know, and it's
and
kind of
I said it one time, and it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't use it often in common conversations, like, but It's like a lot of words have been changed, and now they're very offensive.
Yeah, I don't know. Are you trans? You can use the word trans, transsexual. But if you shorten it and put a Y on the end of it, it has a negative connotation. I don't know when that happened, but that's what happened on the floor of the United States House yesterday when South Carolina Representative Nancy Mace brought it up. It was something to see, I just have to say. Hey, they released that 60 Minutes tape of Kamala, and yeah, it's just what we thought. CBS edited it to try to make her look a little more on the ball. It clearly, the American people didn't buy it, and now they're in court with Donald Trump. We'll talk more about that and some of this USAID aid when we come back in just a minute.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omacid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Minutes, stay tuned.
Every stereotype he's smashed. You know, they say he's anti-Semitic. First visit was BB. They say he's this dictator. Like you said, he delegated Doge to Elon. He hates women. He's surrounded by women. They're giving him hugs as he signs bills to save them. This is also true, too. They said this guy was just going to be a rabid partisan for red states. He's going to save California. He's going to save Southern California. All this stuff they said about him wasn't true. It was all a lie.
Speaking of lies, how about 60 Minutes? So they finally released the full 55-minute-long interview with Kamala Harris that they did. And the reason Donald Trump sued them is he said they creatively edited it so that the answer you heard her give was not the answer to the question you heard the reporter ask. Like, they weren't satisfied with what her response was. And, this has gone on in television news for a long time. A long time ago, the news director, Brain Trust, decided that here's what I want you to do. I want you to, oftentimes, on a single story, a single camera shoot, they would have to turn the camera around and get the reporter to ask the question and then edit the interviewee's response, unless you happen to have the camera over the reporter's shoulder and you had them mic'd and you could hear them ask the question at the same time. Or you do a cutaway where you're looking at the person nodding while they're answering you, or whatever the case happened to be, to make it appear they were directly answering your question. Sometimes you had to edit those answers for brevity. That was not the case with Kamala Harris. Her answer made no sense. So CBS edited it before it aired on 60 Minutes. Here's the before and the after. So just so you're clear on how this went down, go to Cut 13, Carl, please.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
We are not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
That was it. That was the original question and her answer, and then the way it aired on 60 Minutes. Clearly she was giving word salad like she normally does, and they didn't want her to do that on 60 Minutes. So they edited her answer from a different part of the interview as her answer to directly to that question. That's deceptive. If you're watching that from home, you think, well, she gave it perfectly logical. They're opposed to what Benjamin Netanyahu's doing over there. Which, by the way, I'll point out is another reason why Benjamin Netanyahu had this interaction yesterday with Sean Hannity. He went on the Sean Hannity show to talk more about this, and you heard what he said. Listen, and Sean asked him about it again, which I thought was good, and I thought his answer was even better.
You stood with America after 9/11 on this program, on with me many, many times. I'll never forget it. Explain.
It's that simple. He's the greatest friend Israel ever had in the White House. You know, in his first term, he recognized Jerusalem as our capital and moved the American embassy there, recognized our sovereignty over the Golan Heights, got out of the disastrous Iran deal, brokered... and we worked together on this, the historic Abraham Accords that brought peace to Israel and four Arab states. You want more? I mean, that's a lot. And look what he's done in the last few days. I mean, he's done remarkable things. He's released the ammunition that we need to continue and march our march to victory. He's taken action against UNRWA and these other UN agencies that hate America and hate Israel. He's done... enormous things. Yes, he's the greatest friend that Israel has ever had in the White House.
Thank you, Bibi Netanyahu. What he said there is key, because you heard him talking about he's unfunded UNRWA, that UN agency that we know was aiding Hamas in Gaza. Money from the United States taxpayers was through USAID was going to the United Nations, to UNRWA, and then being used potentially, for all we know, by terrorists against one of our allies. And the left is apoplectic that we want to cut some of that funding. There's a girl, I don't know if you've heard of her or not, her name is Natalie Winters. She is on the War Room with Steve Bannon all the time. Listen to what she said about their tracking of some of this money. Listen.
All the American people get to understand about the billions, if not trillions, of taxpayer dollars that we are hemorrhaging to these foreign countries or to these US-based NGOs is like the start date, the end date, and maybe 50-word summary, and who it's going to. And the summary is typically something along the lines of countering disinformation. And the group that it's going to, sometimes it's an undisclosed foreign recipient or undisclosed domestic recipient, and there's nothing we can do to understand who that money's going to. But more precisely, and this was reporting that Raheem Kassam and I had did over at the National Pulse years ago, we had looked up on Google Maps dozens of the addresses of the so-called, you know, fact-checking grant recipients or the misinformation grant recipients. They're shacks on the side of the road. They're non-existent entities. It is clean and simple, pure and simple, money laundering. Moreover,
money laundering. That's exactly what was going on there. And who knew where those kickbacks were going? We're back in just a minute.
Yeah, well, I don't think he talked about sending U.S. troops to complete the job of destroying Hamas. That's our commitment. That's our job. And we're absolutely committed to it. And I also don't think he said that he's going to fund it. He said that neighboring states, wealthy states, would do it. But the actual idea of allowing first Gazans who want to leave, I mean, what's wrong with that? They can leave, they can then come back, they can relocate and come back, but you have to rebuild Gaza. If you want to rebuild Gaza, you can't have, this is the first good idea that I've heard. It's a remarkable idea. And I think it should be really pursued, examined, pursued, and done, because I think it will create a different future for everyone.
Yeah, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu there yesterday with Sean Hannity talking about this idea that the president's floated that has been attacked from all sides, I think, at this point, except by the Prime Minister of Israel. Everyone is talking about it. Christian Daytok on the phone with us right now, White House reporter for The Washington Examiner. Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah,
talk about a contentious issue, it sounds like.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, yeah, thanks for getting up early and doing this. We always appreciate that. I started to read your article there in the Washington Examiner about this, and did not know that the president has considered now using the tariff tool against the countries that are opposed to this.
Well, that was a new development from Wednesday. I spoke to Mike Waltz, the National Security Advisor, on the driveway of the White House about this. And, you know, it would have been an easy opportunity for him to say no. He spoke to us about tariffs the day before in regard to Canada and Mexico. And he left the door open. He said flat out the president views tariffs as a key, tool in his foreign policy arsenal. And I think that sort of speaks to just how quickly this proposal came into being. You know, he might have discussed it with Mr. Netanyahu ahead of that press conference. But the idea that, you know, we could be rebuilding Gaza, we could be forcing the Arab nations to take on these resettled Palestinian refugees, despite their very public opposition to the idea, it's sort of startling. And it's even caught some of the people in this White House off guard.
Yeah, you know, he's often used big ideas like this as a jumping off point or sort of a negotiating tool. And I kind of wonder, when he announced this, I was as shocked by it as anyone else. When you talk about taking over or owning something, it's a financial stake, it sounds like. Questions were raised about whether or not we'd have the right to do this. I heard Pete Hegseth yesterday answering questions about whether U.S. troops would be involved. I mean, it really hasn't gotten that far. He basically just threw this out there, and what we're listening to now is the reaction from countries that have always and only supported a two-state solution, correct?
That is correct. And I just think the speed with which this developed, you're watching not only the Trump White House, but other nations sort of react to this in real time. Of course, Saudi Arabia put out a press release before the press conference was even over that President Trump had with Prime Minister Netanyahu. And it's 4 o'clock in the morning over there. So everyone is sort of keyed into this. And I think the point you just raised about this being a potential trial balloon by President Trump, we do know that is how he likes to operate. He likes to test out new policy ideas, workshop it in real time in the public eye, whether that's on Twitter or at a press conference or anything like that. And when it comes to gaining leverage, the more bombastic of an idea he puts out there, perhaps, you know, the more willing our allies in the region might be to work with us once he starts scaling that back a little bit behind closed doors. So, you know, Donald Trump has an unconventional negotiating style, but if you look at the discussions with Canada and Mexico, even if they didn't necessarily yield major new developments when it comes to, declarations and commitments that they've put forward to border security in the past, it's something that he can turn to his base and say, look at the progress I'm making on this issue. I am the top negotiator in the West. And, there's a reason you put me in the White House.
Yeah, it's true. Christian Detok, my guest, White House reporter for the Washington Examiner. Before we get off this subject, I just have to say, I could see Trump throwing this out there, hearing the immediate criticism from Saudi Arabia, for example, which is flush with cash, and his response being, well, if you don't like this idea, why don't you step in and offer to rebuild Gaza? Somebody's got to do it. It's not going to fall on the Israelis. I don't think the Israelis have any interest in going in and cleaning out all that rubble and rebuilding it. Maybe he's trying to push some of these regional powers, these Arab powers, into making an offer here. I wonder.
It's certainly a possibility. And I do think one thing that we can 100% bank on is that Donald Trump is approaching this situation in the Middle East in a very different way, not only from American leaders, but just from, you know, the standpoint of virtually every dignitary involved in Middle East relations. And let's not forget, you know, he developed a relationship with Saudi Arabia that had sort of, you know, dissolved once he left office when President Biden was in there. So he wants to normalize relations between Israel and the other Middle East and other Arab countries. I'm not sure this is a positive step in that direction, but it's certainly an interesting opening salvo he's got in this new dance that all of these leaders will be playing for the next 4 years.
You heard the Biden administration for so long, Kamala Harris, when she was running for president, sitting there trying to say, well, we need a two-state solution. Well, it's so obvious that that just wouldn't work. So, I mean, what kind of the vibes you're getting now with the Trump administration? Because obviously that's not even an option on the table that, that Trump's trying to suggest as a solution to what's going on there.
You know, Kim, I'm actually not so sure the Trump administration has totally abandoned a two-state solution. I think what we're seeing right now is President Trump trying to keep his options open. I mean, he was pushing a two-state solution during his first term in office ahead of the Abraham Accords, and I'm not sure his thinking has changed entirely on that subject. What has changed is the escalation of this conflict between Hamas and Israel. And when you talk to folks at the White House, be it Mike Waltz or Steve Witkoff, the special envoy to the Middle East, what they are adamantly focusing on right now is the immediate prospects for the advancement of the ceasefire.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to not get ahead of themselves because, one lesson that Jared Kushner learned on behalf of Donald Trump, and I think has extended to Steve Witkoff, his father, is that we can't take any of these peace proceedings for granted. Things can fall down at a moment's notice. There was great progress with the Abraham Accords, but then again, you get a change of power, a switching of the administration, and you know that accord, that brokered peace agreement, the normalization of relations, that really backslid to the point to where we are now, you know, trying to end a war rather than open up trade between countries.
Yeah, I can see that.
So the Trump administration, they haven't come out and said, we support a two-state solution. We absolutely don't support a two-state solution. I think Donald Trump, even though we're seeing him sort of negotiate in public, is ultimately playing his long-term plans a little closer to the vest here.
True. Christian Daytok with us. He's got an article at the Washington Examiner right now talking about the possibility of the president using tariffs to try to force Saudi Arabia or Jordan or some of these other Arab countries to take Palestinian refugees. You know, Christian, I had Lucas Tomlinson on from Fox yesterday. He was at the White House, and I asked him this question. I'd love to get your thoughts on it. What kind of a otherworldly paradigm shift have you experienced in the White House press briefing room between what you were getting under the Biden administration and now Caroline Leavitt and all of the access the press is now getting to Donald Trump?
You just said paradigm shift. I think that's a great way to describe it. I mean, there were doubts about Caroline before she entered this role, and I think she has pretty effectively batted the majority of them down. I don't want to, nitpick specific questions on or answers that Karine Jean-Pierre gave us, but I think one of the problems that she was faced with was she was kept out of meetings by the top Biden advisory team. And that was a conscious decision. They thought, well, if she doesn't have answers on some of these tough questions, she can't lie about it. She can't, blow up our spot, so to speak. And it really sort of hindered her from the get-go. It's pretty clear that Caroline is involved in virtually every top-line conversation at the White House. You saw Donald Trump during that executive order signing ceremony yesterday, call her out ahead of some of the congressmen and the industry leaders who were, integral in this push for them to, quote, keep men out of women's sports. It's clear Donald Trump is leaning on her as one of his top advisors, and it shows with how prepared she is in the briefing room.
Yeah, it shows. Her preparation definitely shows. I watched the entire briefing yesterday, and it was pretty impressive. Christian Daytok, listen, I always appreciate people willing to get up at this hour and help us out here. Thank you.
No problem, guys. Have a great day.
Yeah, take care of yourself. Washington Examiner, White House reporter there. Trump is wielding these tariffs in a lot of different ways, right? Not just on immigration, but on foreign policy here. You're not going to do what we want? Well, we can play with that if you want. Now, you don't want to get too pushy with Saudi Arabia or they
oil's suddenly $100 a barrel again. So I don't know where that goes. But it is something that they've floated out there. All right, coming up, we're going to get to another news with Ethan in a few minutes. Next hour, we get to Jim Talent, former U.S. Senator, and Senator Adam Schnelting, state of Missouri, of course, who wants to add a fine if you hang out too long in the left lane. We'll get to that about 7:35. Stay tuned.
What's happening?
Go, you know the thing.
What the hell is going on?
In other news.
This year's Bourbon and Beyond Festival is returning to Louisville's Highland Festival grounds on September 11th through the 14th. It's featuring major acts like the Lumiere's, Phish, Vance Joyce, Sturgill Simpson, Jack White, and Benson Boone, who will probably do backflips. Tickets are on sale right now at bourbonbeyond.com with various pricing options. General admission going for the low cost of $300. VIP passes ranging from $700 to $2,000. And Mark, if you want to camp, the options range from $330 for tent camping up to $5,000 plus for luxury RV glamping.
What?
Yeah, they're not messing around.
So didn't you go to this?
I have been.
I thought so.
And also, if you want to sit in a lawn chair that you bring in yourself, the promoter is milking you for $15 a day.
To bring your own chair in.
To bring your chair in. They started this last year.
It sounds like this is getting a little out of hand. Like, do they think they're Coachella or something? What the hell?
They will have, I bet, probably 100,000 people there.
Wow.
It is huge. When I went, we thought it was big. And in the last 2 years, it's gotten even bigger.
So the idea of saving yourself a little bit of cash by taking the camper down there is not going to work.
No.
Like, you're going to pay the equivalent of a hotel bill to park your own camper down there and park.
And that doesn't include tickets to the show.
Or the fees.
So my guess is the $5,000 glamping spots are, like, right there, and you can look out your door and hear the music.
Yeah, they didn't have that. They had camping when I went down there, but these, I'm guessing, the glamping spots are something that the promoters
must be
putting out there.
Up, yeah.
The only good thing about that is the camping people can go in and out of the concert whenever they want. And if you don't have one of those wristbands, you're stuck in there. So then you're stuck buying their $20 drinks and their $20 food.
You know what? We had a great experience on the Bourbon Trail down in Kentucky. We went camping. We found a very reasonably priced campsite. And still had a lot of great bourbon. So I'm not quite sure why you put up with that just to hear somebody play live music.
There's a lot of great bands this year. I'll give it that, but I don't know.
Stay off my lawn. Yeah, I'll drink my bourbon on my back porch.
Music producer and Murder, Inc. co-founder Irv Gotti has reportedly passed away at 54 due to a diabetes-related stroke.
Wow.
Gotti, who had battled diabetes for years, was placed on life support after a severe stroke earlier this week following a minor stroke last year. The hip-hop visionary Gotti founded Murder, Inc. Records in 1999, launching the careers of Ja Rule, Ashanti, and producing hits like Always on Time, Foolish, and Jennifer Lopez's I'm Real. He worked with a lot of big names.
Kim would know the early 2000s rap songs that he did.
Oh, yeah.
Probably. I realize when I hear about these deaths, I'm like, gosh, so many other people are dealing with it, just really intense grief.
Yes.
You know, like when you're going through it, you know other people are, but it's so easy to feel like you're alone in that.
And only 54 years old.
And only 54. Yeah.
He say he was dealing with diabetes or something?
Yeah, it was a diabetes stroke.
Wow.
Related stroke.
How sad.
Senators Josh Hawley and Bernie Sanders are teaming up to introduce a bipartisan bill to cap credit card interest rates at 10%, aiming to curb what they call excessive and exploitive rates.
Wow.
I mean, I think that's smart and necessary because the credit card companies are, the interest they charge is outrageous. But what will happen if they do that is some of these credit cards will stop doing the no interest for, you know, 12 right. months, because the idea is, well, we won't charge you interest, but that if you go one day past the 12-month period, we're going to have you back pay on everything and we're going to charge you like 25%, outrageous amount.
My guess is that bill won't go anywhere.
No.
But I could be wrong.
Hopefully it does.
I hope it does.
Maybe.
And is it retroactive?
yeah, there you go.
It says the average credit card interest rate right now is 28.6%.
That doesn't surprise me.
Wow.
That's ridiculous.
That's why and you're paying, like any sort of debt you have, it's like you're paying the interest. You're really not even hitting the principal for a long time, like a mortgage,
right.
You know? So it's depressing when you realize how little you've actually paid when you're making monthly payments for anything.
I love getting in an argument at the counter at some of these stores. You know, if you'll just open up a credit card right now, we can give you an extra 20% off. I'm like, I don't want it.
You know what
you
I
don't
say?
Want to save money? I'm like, I'm not saving money. If not I get a balance run. On there, you're going to charge me 25%.
I say my husband's in finance. He would never let me do this.
Smart.
It's the go-to line for me.
Yeah, no, thank you. Don't be peddling. I know you're making extra money if you sell one of those, but I'm not buying. Not a chance. All right, coming up, we'll get to Senator Adam Schnelting on this left lane bill where he wants to fine you if you hang out over there. And a little later, Shannon Bream on this USAID controversy and the confirmation vote for Pam Bondi. We'll be back.
Get more at 971talk.com.